Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality, with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is the show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution, but all too often, we don't think enough about them. Our goal is to break up complicated topics into small enough bits that we can integrate some aspect into our lifestyle. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can also listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. We encourage and welcome your questions. Today's show is titled Vedanta, which is more commonly known as an ancient Hindu philosophy. Some 3,000 to 5,000 years ago, some amazing beliefs were written down, which today are known as the Vedas, Upanishads, and Puranas. These were the original beliefs, which had become popularly known as Hinduism and later Buddhism. Virtually all of us have been exposed to some form of these beliefs, even if we are not aware of their origin. Today's guest is Jeffrey Armstrong, a student and teacher of this ancient wisdom. Jeffrey is the author of Spiritual Teachings of the Avatar, Ancient Wisdom for the New World, and God the Astrologer. He was featured in the CBC documentaries Planet Yoga and Wings of Yoga and 2004 Leo Award documentary Take Back Your Power. Jeffrey has been a relationship expert, philosopher, practitioner, and teacher of the Vedas for over 40 years. Prior to his teaching, he had a successful career as an executive in Silicon Valley and spent 5 years in a Hindu retreat as a monk. He's been written up about in USA Today, the Wall Street Journal, LA Times, and numerous other publications. Mr. Jeffrey Armstrong, welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you, Dave. Namaste.
I ran into the Vedic philosophy many years ago when I was first reading the Mahabharata and found the Bhagavad Gita within it. It's an amazing wisdom that the ancients had. How'd you find out about it?
Well, like anyone going to university, I started out in psychology and literature, but I had this hunger for truth, and I was just at the generation when it was starting to be available, an international, global buffet of all kinds of knowledge. And I found that every subject I studied pointed back to India, whether it was science or psychology or language, back to the Sanskrit language. So all the roads pointed back in that direction, so I followed them.
You know, now in your book, God the Astrologer, you said that there was no such thing as Hinduism. What do you mean by that?
Well, the word Hindu is a mispronunciation of the river Sindhu. The people in Persia couldn't say the letter S, so they aspirated it to H. They called the people that lived on the other side of the river Hindus. They lived across the Sindhu. You might as well call people on one side of the Mississippi River Issisippians. So actually the culture is named after a whole library of knowledge that is accumulated over many, many, many thousands of years, at least 10 to 12,000 years. And that library is called the Veda. It's a collection of wisdom that's been passed down in the ancient culture of India.
Okay. I had never heard that. That's an interesting. You know, it's funny. We take these words and concepts for granted, and rarely ever take the time and energy to go figure out where they came from.
Absolutely, we use that one all the time. Veda means gave us the word video because it means something that allows you to see the truth, something that lets you see.
Okay.
And it gave us video.
Yeah. You know, I loved the Upanishads. It was probably one of my very favorite books. But when I read the Vedas, and I read them all many years ago, I had the impression that they largely consisted of psalms or poems praising the gods in an effort to get on their good side. The writers didn't seem to consider these deities esoteric spiritual beings, but flesh and blood entities. Did you get that impression when you read it?
No, but yes and no, because you see, with translations, it ever so much depends on the worldview of the person who's translating. In fact, it's like something crossing the border. Translation means to carry across. So the knowledge of India has been carried across to us, but depending on who is carrying it, they slanted it in terms of their own worldview. So remember that it was England who was dominating India for hundreds of years and taking all of its wealth that first gave us an opinion of what India was. So would you trust a German view of Russia? How about a French view of the Germans? And so on. So we've been getting a slanted view of the knowledge of India from the very beginning.
That doesn't surprise me. You're absolutely right. History is written by the people in charge at the moment it's being put down.
They are the victors.
Yeah, the victors indeed. All of these old writings, they were all written in Sanskrit, and I find that it's extremely interesting that the oldest language, which is Sanskrit, I believe that's the oldest or very close to it, is the most complete. You know, don't you find that a bit odd?
It would if you thought that ancient was primitive. And that is the misconception that we've been given in our worldview. But actually, Sanskrit is like a programming language. In fact, it's so perfect, as you suggest, that NASA has been thinking for some years to use it as a programming language, because think of it as a spoken language that is as close to mathematics as one can get. So it's more precise than Greek or Latin, which it is the mother of. And of course, Greek and Latin is the contributor to most of the interesting vocabulary in English and most European languages.
Yeah.
So imagine there's a programming language in ancient India, and they're herding cows on the one hand, but on the other hand, they have a programming language.
Yeah. Where do you think it came from? Any idea?
Well, the final grammar for Sanskrit came about in 800 BC, and it's called the Ashtadhyayi of Panini. And he says that he's the last in 50 generations of people trying to perfect this language so that knowledge that is passed down will never get confused or lost. So it was part of a large historical project. You know, the game Post Office, where you say something and it passes around the room.
Right.
And comes back very different than what you put in motion. So if you think of the problem with history and knowledge, it is that as language and culture morphs, so then does the story. How do you keep a story the same for 10,000 years? The answer is you have a language that's so perfect that it never changes pronunciation. Its meanings always stay the same. Its dictionaries travel with it. And so it's like a steady signal rather than a wavering signal. So Sanskrit was designed to be that steady signal to carry ancient wisdom, supposedly to tell us humans why we're here and who we are.
Yeah, it's amazing because most of it came down orally. It's far older than the 3,000 to 5,000 years that it's been written, and it's amazing that they were able to do that. And I guess they memorized a lot of this stuff.
They certainly did. Memorization was the very way we lived back in those days. And in a sense, you could say that people were trained to become human tape recorders, and know with this perfect language how to chant and intone. So the Upanishads you're talking about, Om Purnam Adha Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasisyate. It's like a broadcast. You can hear it. Like a Morse code almost.
Yeah, right. Right. It's an amazing philosophy, the ancient philosophy, the Vedic lore. Did you ever figure out a way to concisely sum up for those people that aren't familiar with it anything, you know, relatively short that, you know, you can say, hey, this is what it's all about?
Yes, this is Dave, one of my favorite things, David. I love your show because you're trying to do this very thing. So think of it this way. Think of ourselves as immortal beings, meaning we never really die and we never really were created. We exist permanently, always will and always have. So according to the Vedic teachings, this universe is simply a university where we have all come to have the experience of this particular realm called the material world. And this realm of matter is what we're here experiencing. We're on a exploratory trip to the temporary realms of matter. And every single one of us is a divine being, an immortal being. And we've been allowed to come here. And when we came here in the beginning, the teachers said, well, here, you're at a university now, so make this a learning experience. Have respect for one another. See that every living entity here, from animals and plants and trees and insects and humans, are all divine beings inside of different bodies where they're learning different things. Quite a grand view.
Yeah, it is a grand view. Do you see us graduating from this university?
Yeah, that's the goal of now. Yoga has become popular, but what is the goal of yoga? What are they really trying to achieve? And the answer is the ultimate personal freedom. If I said to you, would you rather be in jail or would you rather be free to do whatever you want? The answer is axiomatic. So that personal freedom is called moksha. It means be able to move where you want, go where you want, and experience what you want. That's the goal of the Vedic knowledge, to liberate us from any form of bondage, ignorance, not knowing, wrong action, misconception of who we are, and to see everyone that way so we have mutual respect for one another.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, you said, and I think you said it in the God the Astrologer, maybe somewhere else I was looking, but you said that the soul is caught between the unconscious material world and the spiritual realm. Is that how you see it, or kind of between the two?
Yeah, we're actually described, interestingly enough, as capable of going to either realm. So we're a class of reality. We're individualized beings who've chosen to be here. We weren't forced. We weren't bad to come here. We chose. It's a learning experience. We opted for it. And we're a class of being who's powerful enough to do that, but we're not all powerful. So both the material world and the transcendental world are, in that sense, greater than us. And there are beings who are also of a magnitude greater than us. But we have this interesting ability to go back and forth, but that also leads us to getting lost. We're just bright enough to get ourselves lost, and we're also smart enough to get unlost.
Where did we start?
Well, that's the interesting thing about the concept of immortality. We started before time existed. We started outside of time, and that means we're immortal. We really are deathless, timeless. But we came into a realm that has a beginning, middle, and end.
Now, when you come in, you got to start with a blank sheet, right? You haven't had any experiences. You haven't done anything. You haven't been anywhere. So you must start pretty low on the ladder of spiritual evolution, I would think, like at the bottom.
Absolutely. Well, like first grade or kindergarten, where we all started. But imagine it that way. Imagine each body in the evolutionary scale of things. And that concept of evolution is a Vedic notion, that each of the different bodies we could live in for a period of time is a classroom. And the design of the creature is the thing we're learning and the experiences it is capable of. So if right now there was an amusement park and you could be any creature you wanted for half an hour, wouldn't that be amazing? You could be inside their body, experience the world as any creature you want, a bear, a fish, a shark, a whale. People would be lined up around the block to do that. Well, that's what we do. We go inside those bodies, experience reality through that body. Then we finish with that one, go to the next one, go to the next one, and climb up the evolutionary ladder. Just like going to school.
Yeah. Interesting way of looking at it. And it's, the whole subject is rather fascinating. Now you say that there's a divine intelligence that runs all of this, which almost has to be if you know, it's working so well. You know, do you see it that way, that a divine intelligence created all this and is guiding us and helping us as we work our way through these various lives that we have?
Well, you know where I start, again, to make it simple, is anyone who's listening, so you're probably in a home of some kind. So is that a random or custom home that you're in? And you're not going to answer random. They didn't just throw the nails in the wood.
They didn't just throw it together.
Right? They just grabbed the wood and throw it. And even that's not random. They have to do it purposefully. So it is a purposeful reality. So without making it overbearing, we're clearly in an invention. And it's not something I could invent. So I'm pretty much in awe of this invention that we're inside of, that's orbiting and wobbling and still holding together and building things. And there's apples and food and fruit and people, and they're beautiful and they're amazing. So if you don't feel afraid, you would just be in awe. Be like if I said tonight, here's this science museum, would you like to come with me? And you come and you go, wow, that was amazing. And I say, would you like to come to the party tonight? The people that made the science museum are going to be there, and you'll get to meet them personally. Would you like that? Who would say no?
Right.
If you don't make it complicated, you just go, wow. If you have like childlike eyes of wonder, you go, this is amazing. I'd love to meet whoever made this place. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. Amazing. You know, at one time in your life, Vedic astrology was one of your passions. Is it still?
Oh, yes. I have clients around the world, and I use it. It's a wonderful tool because we're beings who live many lifetimes, we carry inside of us the experience and wisdom of that. And so to see one another, it's better to see this long time that we've been going to school. And the astrological chart is an instrument of looking at each other in a more profound way.
So what is astrology?
Well, it's the notion that the moment that we reincarnate again is a kind of cosmic microfiche. It's a kind of record of the things that we are carrying inside of us that are encoded in us, just like our gene code is a record of our ancestral lineage and our line of building a body up until the body that we're in. So we could look back through our ancestors and track our gene code. These two are converging now, where modern science through genetics is able to measure the genome and look at our genetics. And now there's a thing called body typing in astrology and in Ayurvedic medicine. And that body typing means you can look at someone and tell how their body is made, which tissues predominate and things like that. They're now able to use body typing as it was anciently used in India, 5-10,000 years, and know the body type that would have been predicted that way, predicting it from the genetics. So these sciences are now converging. But it means we brought in a history of experience with us that's encoded in our genetics. Think of it that way.
You know what? You said in God the Astrologer that astrology means, in Sanskrit, means how light regulates life in the realm of matter. I mean, that's a really interesting view of it. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, we use these words colloquially. We say enlightened, that the person is very enlightened. We do get the notion that being in the dark is not a great thing, and becoming more aware or enlightened is a better thing. So this is the notion that, in fact, if you trace the light back to its source, hopefully you would become enlightened. So this world, mixed up as it is between inert matter, so the nature of matter is to be inert, and then the light itself is infusing it with the energy that causes it to then go into motion. And literally think of the day and night that is revolving as a kind of blinking. And if you didn't blink, if you held steady instead of going dark, you'd be enlightened, which means your eyes would be open all the time instead of sleeping half the time. So this world is a kind of movie that's being broadcast onto the screen of darkness. The entire existence is a grand image that's being projected into space.
That's an interesting concept. You know, you study the science aspect of it. Do you see science coming closer to understanding astrology? Have you noticed anything, recently in science that would help people, see astrology from a scientific perspective?
Yeah, the Vedas themselves always were scientific, and because the Veda is a library with this very scientific language, Sanskrit, it isn't that science is something we invented. It's that we inherited it from the Vedas via the Germans, especially all the German rocket scientists and all this flowering of World War II science that happened in Germany that led us to our modern technological situation was actually because the Germans had the largest Sanskrit library outside of India and were scholars of Sanskrit and had learned the science that was in the Vedas. And what we've now done is built on top of that science. So as for astrology, imagine ourselves as repeatedly taking birth. And this is the part that we have to get a hold of to understand. If we only think we have one life, then astrology makes no sense. In fact, life makes no sense if you think of it from a bigger perspective. If you really only have one life, then there's no future. If you only have one life and then you go to heaven or hell, then it's completely unfair. It's tyrannical because you have a few moments to be good or bad and then forever you will get punished. Nothing could be worse than that. That's a terrible worldview. That's a bully's worldview. So the worldview that makes the most sense is we have this long, long period of time, as much time as we really want. And from life to life, we're learning. So imagine that we carry our record of what we've learned with us, and each new body we get has that encoded inside of it so that we continue where we were. It's kind of when you leave your body, death is not ending, it's leaving your last body, going into another one, the record of your progress is inside there, and you wake up as a child and go, where was I? And you resume. So everyone's on a different timeline. So astrology is simply gathering some inside information, the same way you would with your genetics, about how you've evolved and what kind of a being you are and what you're carrying inside of you as your experience from your previous life. You might say astrology is the record of your stories over many, many, many human lifetimes. And it carries information about you that you're going to experience as yourself, but it's the blueprint of what you're calling yourself, which is really a vehicle. Think of your body as a car and not as a body. And this is what reincarnation is. It's getting into your car again. But imagine you're handcuffed to the steering wheel, so you don't know how to get out of your car. And dreaming at night is getting out of your car for a little while they work on it. It's on the bed. It's not conscious, but you're conscious and you go dream. So you're the dreamer. And that in Sanskrit, you're called the Atma, the part that can't be destroyed.
We're talking with Jeffrey Armstrong concerning the ancient Vedic philosophy. So let's stick with astrology for a minute here. How can there are planets out there? People look at the planets. How does the planet impact us when we're born?
Well, that's a great question. And a matter of fact, many naive astrologers say, the planet is controlling us. Well, not physically, because the gravity of the planet is not as great as that of the bodies of the doctor and nurse in the operating room. So if you don't understand, there's a higher understanding of what a planet really is. Think of the physical planet as the outside of something. Just as your physical body is not you, as our body ages, we don't become internally ugly or less useful. Our external body becomes less useful, and we look at it and go, wow, my vehicle's not working so well.
Right.
So think of the planet as a vehicle for divine control over us, because we're not totally free. We're still receiving something. Now, what is it that we're receiving? Cause and effect. That's the basis of science. And in Sanskrit, that's called karma. So let's say that in a previous life, somebody owed you $1 million. Well, you really are owed that, and you have to get it sometime, but you leave that body before you can get it. So you come into this body, and there's an IOU pending, and somehow $1 million has to drop into your lap. So you win the lottery, or this happens, or that happens. Now, the timing of those things happening is not random. It's actually sequential. And the movement of the planets coincides with the delivery schedule of the cause and effect, the major cause and effect that we're receiving, which is the fruit or result of our previous lives' actions. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have free will now. It only means that life is a combination of the cause and effect that's following us and the new events that we're putting in motion now using our free will, which will then be our future. So funnily enough, right now we're creating our future by what we do.
Okay, so the planets have, I assume, some, I mean, everything has a vibration, right? Everything vibrates. Planets clearly vibrate. Is it the vibration of the planet that impacts us?
Not exactly. In fact, behind the planet is a being or a group of beings. And if you'd like, it's not quite the right word, but just imagine that everything in nature, imagine you're in a great hotel. Have you ever been to a really great hotel in a place like Bali or somewhere where they have a lot of people taking care of you with smiling faces and cleaning your room and making everything great?
I have, but hotels, not enough.
Really. That hotel staff is making your vacation possible. They're kind of like you, but their job is to help you have your vacation. So according to the Vedas, the universe is run by divine beings. Beings like us, but their job right now is to run a universe. And the only way we can see them is seeing that the universe keeps working, keeps happening. So in other words, there's somebody who's making karma, that's us, who's using free will to create cause and effect and explore right now our vacation in the material world. And there's another group, and they're called the Deva, the divine helpers. And the divine helpers run the planets, they run the universes, and they run cause and effect. They literally give us the result of our previous actions so we can keep going, in the same way that the hotel staff changes our bed, gives us new sheets, gives us new towels. So the planets and astrology are about this relationship between us as agents of free will, receiving the results of cause and effect, and the divine agents who are giving us that coincided with the movement of the planets.
And how about constellations? How does that factor in?
Well, the whole thing is an intricate, interlocked system. Just like, imagine how complex it is to send a rocket. NASA is sending a rocket out into space. To us, it just looks like a rocket. But in actual fact, they know every rivet, every bolt, every wire, every screw, every bit. And every one of those is cooperating together to make that rocket possible. It's not just a rocket. It just looks like a rocket from the outside. So the world that we live in is exactly like that. And many of the major things that land in our life, let's say you have a child. That child has come to you and it has a history. It's not a baby. It's a divine being who's had many, many lifetimes. And now it's taken a new body. Looks to you just like a cute baby, but inside there, is a future president, a future axe murderer, a future astronaut, a future pilot, a future this, a future that. And they already have a history traveling with them. So someone's got to deliver that history. That's what the planets do. Or rather, they're markers for the divine beings who are delivering the history that we're here to resume.
Okay. Now you said in your book that Western astrology is 23 degrees or almost 2,000 years off. It's wrong. Mm. How do we know that? And what's the implication? Is it all these horoscopes that everybody reads and they're more for entertainment than anything else, I guess, but that would imply that the horoscopes are wrong.
Indeed, so.
Yeah.
And now for the listeners, they have to focus intently. Whenever we start talking about the stars, because usually the stars come out when we're asleep, most people go to sleep. It's a big view. But imagine our planet. We all know that it's on an axis, so it's tilted at 23 degrees, slightly on an angle. And that's why we have seasons. As it goes around, the rays of the sun strike the planet differently. We have winter or summer, according to the angle of the sun's rays. So that's the tilt. Then it's turning once a day. So that's our day. We see that Earth is turning. But there's another motion that most people haven't learned about, and that is the pole of the Earth. So imagine, see the Earth with a pencil sticking through it. That's the axis. And it's wobbling like a gyroscope. And the pole of the Earth is actually wobbling and pointing to different stars very slowly. That wobble takes 25,920 years for the pole of the Earth to make one circle in space to slowly wobble.
Right.
Now, if you divide 25,920, this is the ancient and NASA's number. It was both from India, and it's what NASA agrees. That's exactly how long. If you divide that by 12, the number of constellations, you get 2,160 years. And each one of those is the amount of time it takes for one of the star groups in the sky, one of the signs, to rise with the sun on the first day of spring. So imagine here comes the first day of spring. We ask, what stars is the sun with? Well, it would always be the same stars, except for this wobble. And that wobble means gradually the sign on the first day of spring changes, and it goes backwards across that point. And it takes 2,160 years for each sign. So Aries is rising with the sun for 2,160 years. Then it's Pisces. Then it's Aquarius. And that's why you hear people say we're heading toward the age of Aquarius. We're in the age of Pisces. But Western astrology has ignored this wobble. And it did so because astrology is about reincarnation, and Christianity doesn't believe in reincarnation. So Christianity was against astrology because they thought they misunderstood it, and they didn't like the notion of reincarnation. So the opposition to astrology distorted it, and Western astrology is that distorted astrology. But in India, no one was ever against astrology. It was always the worldview that over long, 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 long periods of time were evolving. So it wasn't until fairly recently that this knowledge came back out of India. And I'm one of those persons who received that astrological knowledge and saw the difference. And that's when I wrote the God, Goddess, the Astrologer book. And so it actually means that Western astrologers are not using the actual star positions. And if you ask any astronomer, they'll say, astrology is ridiculous. You don't use the correct star positions. But we, who are sidereal astrologers, we do use the actual star positions. So okay. It means that all Western horoscopes are almost 24 degrees inaccurate, and it probably means you're not the sign you think you are.
Why should people bother with astrology? What's the value? I mean, obviously it's interesting, but what's the value that people can get at?
It's like asking, why should people bother with knowledge? What does knowledge do for us? And the answer is, of course, it gives us a connection, a truthful connection to things that are happening around us so that we can succeed better. We can cooperate better. We can work with nature rather than be run over by nature or work against nature. So if you think of it from our point of view, we're inside of this very amazing, elaborate, complex scientific invention called a world. Look at climate change right now. The people that deny it are fools. The people who understand that we're modifying even the climate right now say, whoa, we should be careful. We could destabilize the whole planet and half the people could die. Half the beings could die. Because it's a mechanism and we're powerful enough to have an impact on it. So to put it simply, we're supposed to cooperate with nature. We'll have a better life and more fun and overall better outcome if we do.
How about things like compatibility? Would you ever look at astrology and look at a potential mate and see if they were compatible with you or wouldn't you?
Yes. And the crux of the question you're asking, David, rests on something called body type. Anyone who's gone to university has heard of the psychologist William Sheldon. He said that people were either ectomorphs, mesomorphs, or endomorphs. He said they either have a skinny, nervous, high-strung disposition, ectomorph, or mesomorph, medium build, muscular, powerful, strong, or endomorph, curvaceous, tending to carry more weight. So think of people as skinny, medium, and heavy, or curvaceous.
Okay.
Three types. Now, Sheldon saw this, but the ancients also saw this, and they said some people are more like air and space. They're slender, they're delicate, they're refined, and some are more like they're muscled and strong and intense, more like fire. And some are more like water and earth. They're relaxed and slower moving and calm and easygoing. So this is called body type. We all have a particular body type. And if you know that body type, it's like knowing your vehicle type. So now think of the body as a vehicle and think some people have a pickup truck. Some people have a luxury car. Some people have a sports car. Some people have a race car. Would that be interesting to know? Would it be interesting to know the specifications of the kind of car you have? Yes, of course, it'd be important. If you have a race car, you have to drive it like a race car. If you have a sedan, you drive it like a sedan and take care of it like one. So what if we come with a vehicle, our body? And what if our horoscope can tell us information about the maintenance and utility and capabilities of that body? Now, if we strapped a sports car to a Jeep, would that be a good relationship? Not good. If we strapped a sports car to a pickup truck, would those two vehicles be happy?
Probably not.
Probably not. So what if we're the people inside? We're the divine being, the Atma. But our vehicles, if they're incompatible, we're not going to really have a great time together. There's a lot of people who have divorces who afterwards go, you know what? I really like you. You're still my friend. I just can't live with you. They're incompatible. Their vehicles can't go down the road together. And this knowledge is visible when you look at a horoscope. You can see what the specific engineering capabilities of the vehicle are. And you can say to two people, do you know, I think you're going to have trouble going down the road together. I know you love each other. That's cool. That's great. But you can't, you're not going to go down the road very well because you're off-road and you're a sports car. That's going to be a mess.
How can people find out? Where would you go to look for the more accurate, the Vedic astrology numbers as opposed to the, what do you call them? Tropical? Is that the
East? That's one way to say it. The Western astrology is called tropical, and the Vedic is sidereal or star-based astrology.
Okay.
Well, first you have to find a genuine practitioner, someone like myself. I've been practicing Vedic astrology now for 48 years or so. So you have to find an experienced practitioner, like in any science or art, and get into hearing the fundamentals of it and understanding. At the basis of this is something called five element science. And there's a medical system, both Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine of India and Vedic astrology are all based on this, that everything around us and all of the physical things in our world are made of earth, water, fire, air, and space. And that may sound primitive, but if you look around you, look at all the earth, look at all the water, look at the fire influencing everything, look at the air, look at the space that surrounds everything. These are the fundamental elements before the complex atomic elements. So there's a science that's based on these five elements that every individual can learn quite easily. It's not like getting a PhD in chemistry. But once you learn it, it's like think of the difference between a PC and a Macintosh. Only geeks liked PCs. And typical end users wanted a Macintosh interface. So five element science is an easy and useful way to interact with the world, with food, with each other, with what you eat. And so behind Vedic science is this very useful user interface that got forgotten. And those of us who do this five element science are bringing it back. And it's so simple and so useful. Even a child can go, oh, I see, you have the water earth body type. Oh, you have the fire body type. Oh, you have this. So then as it becomes a little more complex, it helps you to have a universal language of talking about how the world is working. And it gives you more control over your own well-being because you're a participant instead of it just happening to you.
You know, a lot of people, you mentioned karma a couple times. A lot of people get confused between free will and karma. Could you explain how those two work together?
Sure. One of the things I like to say is today is the tomorrow you created yesterday. So just think that every day, the things we do accumulate and change the direction of our destiny. Karma is not something mysterious. Karma is cause and effect, but it's an immortal being carrying the results of cause and effect from life to life until those results are acted out. See, if you were an investor and every day your portfolio was gone and all the work you'd done was destroyed, it would be very frustrating. But if every time you got up in the morning, you checked your stocks to see how they were doing and where you were, your projects, what that you were working on, you checked in to see how they're developing, that would be a much more satisfactory way to go. So karma is the fact that the universe is based on cause and effect. Its rules weren't made by us. We have to learn to follow its rules. So learning those rules empowers us. But we are free agents up to a point. You and I can't just look at the stars and say, move. But we can move the things in our house around. We can move from one house to another. And we ask the question of ourselves, how much free will could I have? Could I travel? Could I earn a bunch of money, save the money, and then go travel the world? Could I do this? Could I do that? So that's karma. We think of it as life, but life is really cause and effect. The more we understand cause and effect, the more empowered we are. And astrology is about long-term cause and effect.
All right. So we have free will. Free will allows us to do what we want right now, right this moment. But sooner or later, we have to deal with the karma, the effects that we have caused.
Well, and if you think about it, it's almost like we're all farmers and we're planting seeds. So the seed we plant today, we do something, then grows. When you say something, there's an old saying, an enemy is created when you say something that can't be forgiven.
Okay, so the seed is the free will planting the seed.
And taking an action that sends us a result that's coming from a particular thing that we just did using that free will.
Right. And that's the karma part.
Now the sequence of events. So think of a courtroom and think of a trial, and the judge is trying to understand the sequence of everything that took place. So let's talk about what happens when we leave our body. It isn't that we're punished. It's that they show us our movie and they show us all the things we did, and they explain universal law and say, here's when you broke this law, here's where you broke this one, here's where you broke this one. That's why this went bad and this went good, and then this changed and that changed. And so it's explained to us. It's not punitive. It's a learning. So it's the same with life. If you're just punished every time you make a mistake, it doesn't help. But if it's explained to you the correct way to do it, the way you did it that didn't work, then you can do it right the next time and get the right result. And then you have more pleasure. You're happier.
Right. That's a good way to do it. We're running a little low on time. And two things I want to make sure we get in. One, I was very interested in your comment that how prisons could be redesigned in order to more effectively retrain the inmates. Could you talk a little bit about how that would work?
Sure. Well, and remember what I said about one lifetime or many lifetimes. So if you only have one lifetime, you do right or wrong, and then you get punished hugely. It's kind of the way our prison system has worked. And worse, we now let other people make a lot of money feeding junk food to the prisoners and do terrible things. So instead, if we thought of those beings as beings that had a bad moment, did something that wasn't useful, how could we get them back to useful? Then prison isn't a place of punishment. And no reasonable person is happy to see another person suffer. But rather, it's a place where we rectify the situation until we have a confidence that that person is ready to come back and be a contributing member of society. We've just got the whole premise wrong. We think of it as punishment for something you did, but who hasn't had a bad moment? We'd all be in prison if we were kept caught in our worst moments, or we'd all be in some kind of bondage. So really, it's helping people to get free from the effects of a bad moment and come back to a more constructive self. And after all, no one dies. There is no death. There's only a continual rebirth and trying again. So why not help people to try again in prison?
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Jeffrey, we've run out of time. Could you please tell the people, you know, what they're doing, how they can get in touch with you, and especially about the book that you're working on?
Yes, thank you, Dave. Well, Vedic astrology is a useful thing. People come and have their chart read, and through that get insights into the way things work in their being, in their life, learn their body type, and use it for compatibility, use it for cultivating their career. And it acts as a kind of support system for, it's like preventive medicine. It helps you make the right choices, and it helps you interact more successfully with those around, helps for mediating disputes and family disputes, and it's useful in business, many different places. And as for the book that I'm translating, it is the Bhagavad Gita, which is, think of it as the main statement of the greatest wisdom that's been passed down in India. It's the Supreme Being talking to us as humans and giving us, you might call it, friendly advice on how to really succeed. And it's been translated many times, but the English language is mostly designed and used by the Christian religion, which isn't a bad thing. After all, Christianity is a sincere attempt at many things, but it's a different culture. So I'm putting the Bhagavad Gita into the correct English so that its meaning becomes clear and transparent, and so that people can get the benefit from it. Just as yoga is now being practiced by a couple of 100 million people around the world, so think of the Bhagavad Gita as a codified manual of all the ways to live in this world that are very useful and full of all kinds of wonderful wisdom.
Okay, great. Hey, Jeffrey, it's been great having you on. Jeffrey Armstrong, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you, David, for your great interest in this subject and for having a show that tries to make all of this clear and understandable for the people in the world.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover all these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.